It's 8 o'clock. This is KVNF Regional News for Monday, March 2nd. I'm Patricia Naft. The North Fork Ambulance Association is facing a large budget deficit. That's why the organization is hosting a series of meetings to gather ideas from the community on what to do about the problem. The first meeting was in Hotchkiss last week. KVNF's Laura Pomisano reports.
The North Fork Ambulance Association is the only ambulance service provider in the North Fork Valley. About 50 volunteer emergency responders staff it. The nonprofit is funded by paid memberships, grants from the state, and charging non-members for ambulance services. Kathy Steckel, the association's executive director, says that model isn't working anymore.
And in the last year or two, we have seen that we're starting to operate in the red. And I think this is mostly because the costs are increasing.
This year, the organization is facing a budget deficit of more than $190,000.
It means we have to start dipping into our reserves. We're able to sustain ourselves until we find a better way of doing business.
Steckel says possible changes include raising membership fees, billing members' insurance for services, and fundraising. She says the association wants community input on what it could do to address its financial problems. And that's why the organization is hosting a series of public meetings in the coming months. The next meeting is scheduled for late March. For KVNF, I'm Laura Pomisano.
Earlier this month, we reported that ski patrollers in Telluride were voting on whether or not to unionize. The results are in. This is Al Kogler from the Communications Workers of America, a union in Denver that facilitated the vote.
Well, I'm very pleased to announce that by a vote of 47-1, the Telluride Ski Patrollers chose to be represented by CWA. The main idea behind everything is these workers wanted to have a say in their wages and working conditions, and they had repeatedly asked to be involved in that, but whenever the workers tried to advance proposals or anything, management made it very clear that they certainly weren't going to negotiate. So the workers, having tried the voluntary approach, decided that, well, if we form a union, now they'll legally be required to negotiate with us.
Kogler said that they will hopefully enter formal negotiations with the resort in the next 3 to 6 months, but it very likely may take longer than that. Governor John Hickenlooper's Oil and Gas Task Force delivered its final recommendations. Benta Berkland sat down with the governor to discuss his thoughts on the group's work and some of the backlash from members of his own party.
Governor, thanks for joining me.
Glad to be back.
Some Democrats at the state capitol have been calling your oil and gas task force a fail. Senator Matt Jones from Longmont, where there's a lot of concern about fracking, said he gives it an F+. What's your reaction to at least some of this stuff inside the state house where Democrats are saying, look, this task force didn't go far enough?
That's absurd. You know, they had pre-decided what they wanted the outcome to be. We assembled civic leaders from, Republicans, Democrats, even numbers of everybody. Becky Corliss, former Supreme Court Justice. Rush George, former Speaker of the House. We tasked them, should local communities have veto control? That's what Matt wants to have. He wants local communities to be able to have a veto control. That's taking someone's private property. Someone paid money for those leases 30 years ago before the houses ever got close. And now because housing's come closer to that person's lease, government should come tell them that they can't extract the minerals that they had purchased years ago. It doesn't make any sense. And I think the civic leadership of this state said that's not the right solution. So to say that they didn't resolve it is inaccurate. They did resolve it.
Is there a middle ground where local communities could have stricter standards than the state?
I think we have gone as far at the state level just about as you can go, and many oil companies think we've gone way too far. We're requiring them to have less dust, less noise. Some of the recommendations that came out of this task force are going to, if they're going to have high-intensity operations anywhere near an urban area, they're going to have to go through all kinds of hoops. Every time you're asking them to go through another hoop, that costs money, that diminishes the value of that lease. Again, I've said from the beginning, I would like to have as much local control as possible, but it's got to be within the context of respecting private property.
Any of the 9 recommendations you don't support?
No, I think, obviously we always support some more than others, but these folks worked many, many, we're talking as a group, thousands of hours to get to this point, and these are pretty common sense solutions and improvements to our system. Now, do they go far enough? I don't know. I think as time goes on, we will find ways to improve the relationship between extraction and neighborhoods. Every year, they are making their operations cleaner and safer, and we should hold them to that. And as technology evolves and we get new innovations, we'll find ways to have less of an impact every year.
You created this task force to avoid a fight at the ballot box last November. Do you think now we're destined to see something in 2016?
I don't know if we'll see something or not. I do think that the industry compromised far more than many people thought they would. To be quite blunt, I think they probably compromised more than I thought they would. I think if something does go to the ballot box, it will have a much harder time passing just because so much of what people cared about is being addressed and will be addressed.
A lot of people that were behind those anti-fracking initiatives, they wanted it to go a lot farther. So for that population, it may not be enough.
Sure, but that population is, I don't know, 5 or 10% of the voting population of the state. They're going to have to find a much broader cross-section to pass one of these ballot initiatives, and that means they're going to have to be pretty modest, right? They can't say they're going to ban fracking, or they can't. The Speaker of the House said, you can't go around banning fracking. That's basically denying the ability to drill and extract minerals. They're going to have to go with a pretty moderate proposal, which is essentially what we saw here. This is what our civic leadership of the state came up with.
Thanks, Governor. We appreciate your time.
Benta, always a pleasure.
I'm Benta Brookland in Denver.
Tomorrow, the town of Paonia will hold a public hearing about the dismissal of Barbara Peterson, the town clerk that was let go late last year for budget reasons. It came to light that as an appointed official, Peterson couldn't just be dismissed for any reason and had to have a hearing with charges of wrongdoing brought against her. Since then, she gave the town a letter of her intent to sue. The hearing at the town hall will start at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning and is open to the public, although there will be no time for public comment. And finally, the average age of the American farmer is rising, and the Western Slope is no exception. To discuss this, KPNF's Jake Ryan talked with High Country News' Tay Wiles, who recently reported on the grain drain.
The average age of farmers has been increasing for the past three decades. It did take a dip in the 1970s from 50 to 51, but right now it's at 57. About a third of principal farm operators in the country are over 65.
Why has the age gone up, and why aren't young people refilling that role?
It's a complicated issue. There are a lot of answers to that question. One of them is that it is difficult to be a smaller farmer today. Part of that is because the country is becoming more dependent on larger scale food production. And part of it comes from the Farm Bill. In the 2014 Farm Bill, there were billions of dollars of subsidies still going to commodity growers. So it is difficult to get into the industry. A lot of it is also young people are leaving rural areas where agriculture has traditionally been done. And so a lot of people who are interested in getting into farming, they're not necessarily from a farming family. Their parents or their grandparents didn't necessarily do it, so they're not inheriting land, inheriting resources and institutional knowledge. So there are just a lot of barriers, I think, for people who are getting into the industry who haven't done it before.
This is some important stuff. This is America's food. Has the government tried to do anything to combat this?
Recently, the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, recently announced $18.5 million in new grants for younger farmers and new farmers, which they define as someone who's been farming for less than 10 years. Those grants are part of the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, which was originally established in the 2008 Farm Bill. And so this is a continuation of that. They announced taking applications for those grants this January. Deadline is March 13th. And these grants are for education, outreach, and assistance programs for new farmers, because they do recognize that there are fewer, the age is going up and there are fewer young farmers out there.
The numbers are a little shocking. There's a kind of a spread across America with a much older population in the South. But even here on the western slope of Colorado, Montrose County, the average age is 60 and up.
Right.
And the youngest county, it looks like here, is San Miguel with 57. That's an old population.
You said that this is serious stuff and that it's important to take note of this. The USDA is citing numbers, projections of an 8% decrease in the number of farmers and ranchers between 2008 and 2018. So that's sort of like part of the reason why they're trying to get these grants out there and trying to get the help to younger farmers to entice them to come into the industry.
That was KBNF's Jake Ryan talking with Tay Wiles, online editor for High Country News. Stay tuned for Go Betty and the Monday Morning Music Mix. For KBNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.